science, learning, business, community. You. Welcome to Think Works, the podcast for people who like to think. Because thinking is the hardest work there is. Come with us on a journey into the world of ideas with your host, Darren Smithson.
Hello and welcome to ThinkWorks, the place where we do all the heavy lifting when it comes to thinking. And this week I want to talk about one of my two scientific heroes, one being Einstein, of course. But on this program, I want to really focus on Carl Sagan and why and how it is that he got me along on certain paths of exploration of my own, but also his profound impact on the worlds of science and in particular of space exploration, and his legacy of what he's left behind in terms of how he, more than probably any other popular figure in science, galvanized young minds to start thinking, this is what I want to do. I want to go into the scientific fields, and in particular into space exploration. So, without further ado, let's discuss Carl Sagan and his stellar legacy in science and culture. Now, like most people, my first encounter with Carl Sagan was through his TV program Cosmos, which was released in 1980. It was a very brave program to put forward by the American network TV networks, because I don't think anything like it had ever been done before. There'd been one-offs here and there about particular types of space exploration or particular theories, but to do a 13-part series which had fantastic visuals, it has to be said, including a 3D spaceship that Carl would sometimes sit in while he was explaining some of the theories, like the Einstein's theory of relativity and why the speed of light is a constant and all this kind of stuff. And to do that in such a way that made it accessible to the masses, which is what Carl was particularly brilliant at, it was such a brave decision, and yet it really paid dividends in so many ways, because it took complex scientific concepts and it made them accessible and critically exciting to the general public through his storytelling and through the series visual effects that were around him when he was doing these explanations. And apart from setting me off down the road of exploration when it comes to science and space in particular, the series itself led to a massive increase in the interest in astronomy and science worldwide, with tens of thousands of people signing up to do science courses during and shortly after the first run of this TV series. And the Cosmos legacy itself has also continued, because figures like Neil deGrasse Tyson, he's also done a follow-up to Cosmos and dedicated it to his hero, which is also Carl Sagan. I'll explain more about that later. So Cosmos itself was called Cosmos, A Personal Voyage, and it first aired in 1980. And it was written by Carl Sagan, his wife Andrewn, and Stephen Sotter. And it was groundbreaking because it blended seamlessly as well. It blended science, philosophy, and storytelling. And for its 13 episodes, it covered a wide range of scientific topics, from the origins of life and of evolution as well within that, but also the nature of space and time, and it presented them in such a way that it made them relatable and exciting to such a broad audience. And Cosmos, I think it was originally broadcast on PBS. It's now been seen by well over 500 million people in more than 60 countries, and it still is a program that is updated and shown on TV. And in fact, recently I bought the original DVD box set of Cosmos, and at the end of each episode, if there's been any advances based on some of the ideas that were put forward in an episode, or if there's been a new experiment that either proves or expands upon one of the theories put forward in an episode, Carl then comes back and does an epilogue, which is absolutely brilliant because the series is constantly updated and refreshed. Now, Carl sadly is no longer with us, but his natural successor, Tyson, he has continued on with a new series as well called Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey, which was released in 2014. And that focused on further modern scientific discoveries. And that, too, had millions and millions of viewers. And it just demonstrates the lasting appeal and influence of the original series. And it's clear as well that following the release of Cosmos, there was a significant increase in enrollment in astronomy and physics courses across universities across the world. While the exact numbers vary, the trend highlights the series' role in driving academic interest. And it certainly got me started down the road of exploring science and not just being a science fiction fan, which is what I was at the time, but actually looking at the science itself and especially space exploration and the physics side of science, which always has held much more of a strong interest for me. But it all started, the germ of it all started when I was watching on my little portable telly in my bedroom the original Cosmos series with Carl Sagan, which completely blew me away, and I could not wait for the next week's episode. It was absolutely astonishing. I could still remember the feeling of excitement that I had watching each episode unfold, and when I watched the DVD box set a couple of years ago, I had that same sense of excitement and wonder. He's a marvel at taking these complex scientific theories and presenting them in such a way that we really do engage with him and in the theory that he's explaining. Absolutely superb. I think Brian Cox is probably the closest today in terms of how he presents ideas and concepts, but I don't think even he could have done what he's done without Carl Sagan first paving the way. And in fact, many current scientists, educators, and science communicators do indeed cite Cosmos as a major influence in their decision to pursue careers in science. And it underscores its role in inspiring a generation to explore and understand the universe itself, which is, given how we are dumbing down, generally speaking, across the world with the way that TV is literally catering to the lowest denominator, I just think something like Cosmos and its impact cannot be understated, and we need to get back into this using TV as an education tool, not just as an entertainment tool. What Cosmos did so well, it bridged the gap and did both. It educated while entertaining. And that is a rare mix of programs for adults in particular. To underscore this, there was a survey conducted several years post-launch, and it indicated that approximately 80% of viewers reported a renewed or first-time interest in science after watching the series, and that highlights its effectiveness in engaging with the general public. And the success of Cosmos led to increased media coverage itself of space exploration and scientific endeavours in the 1980s, and that indicated a broader cultural shift towards valuing and discussing scientific topics. Now, we've kind of, that focus has kind of drifted away as corporations are chasing the mighty dollar all the time. So their news, in inverted commas, becomes more about the common denominator rather than the fact that there's been a scientific breakthrough. And we need to get back to that. And I'm hoping that the scientific establishment will take a look at what Cosmos did, how it did it. And by working with the likes of Cox and Tyson and Brian Green, who is the superstring expert, shall we say, and again, a great communicator, I think we need to be putting together a proper program to bring back to the TV and back to the masses and see if we can re-engage the brain and that spark of curiosity to explore beyond what we've been told all the time. Now, it wasn't just through Cosmos that Carl Sagan had such an impact. He worked across many different fields of science and had massive contributions towards both science and space exploration. Now, he worked on planetary science, for example, and he did research on Venus's greenhouse effect and the seasonal changes on Mars. And some of that modelling is what then became used within the assessment of the effect of greenhouse gases here on Earth. He had a vital role in several key space missions, including his contributions to the Mariner, Viking, Voyager, and Galileo missions. And again, he worked on developing the kind of overall structure of what the missions would entail, and also on some of the delivery mechanisms that would be needed for those pioneering satellites to be so successful. He also firmly believed that we could not be the only intelligent life in the universe, because the universe is so vast and there are so many different forces at play. So he actually was instrumental in bringing along the SETI project, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and its efforts to communicate with potential extraterrestrial civilizations, which included the Golden Record on the Voyager spacecraft. So let's go into some of that in more detail. So in terms of his research on planetary science, for example, Cowles' early work included significant discoveries about the atmospheres of planets. He hypothesized that the high temperatures of Venus were due to a dense carbon dioxide-rich atmosphere leading to the greenhouse effect, where the sunlight's energy would get through the clouds on the way in, hit the ground, reheat, but then those heat rays couldn't get back into space through the cloud of carbon dioxide. And this was later confirmed by the spacecraft missions that were sent to Venus and Mars. And with Mars in particular, Cowell studied the seasonal changes on Mars and contributed to the understanding of its surface and climate dynamics. And that influenced how many scientists view the potential life-sustaining environments on the red planet, and in particular the fact that there had to be water at one point on the planet. And in fact, since then, we've obviously discovered the polar ice caps on Mars, where there are vast resources of water frozen in ice. And as made fun of in some ways in many science fiction movies ever since, one of his greatest legacies is the Golden Record aboard the Voyager spacecraft. He led the team that compiled the messages for extraterrestrial life, which includes sounds and images representing Earth's diversity. And although it remains a testament to his vision for universal communication and his positive belief on space, it has obviously been that there's lots of throwaway lines in various alien invasion movies where it's like, oh, we sent a record into space telling everyone exactly where to find us, and now they're coming to take our planet. We're hoping, of course, that advanced life that's made it to the stars, that is exploring space, is far, far more advanced than us, both emotionally and intellectually. And they're not interested in taking our resources. They are interested in working and communicating and exchanging ideas. That's the idea. It's kind of like the initial Star Trek vision, where you have lots of friendly aliens. Yes, I know that there's lots of unpleasant ones, but the idea was that we would go out and we would find a federation of planets, so to speak. And I think that's a really important legacy that often gets overlooked. And Anne Duran, Sagan's wife and collaborator, often shared how he insisted that the Golden Record contained a message of hope and optimism about Earth, and viewed it really as a gift from humanity to the cosmos, because it had lots of different mathematical equations on relativity and Newton's law and thermodynamic laws, etc., etc. All these things are included on this record. And because it's gold, it won't degrade while it's in space. And I just think it's an incredible vision and achievement that we forget about. The excitement that we had about going into deep space, and Voyager is still out there, still traveling at an incredible speed as well. And I mentioned about SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Life. So he was a real key advocate for setting it up, and he pushed the scientific community to take the search for life beyond Earth seriously, you know, to move away from the little green men and the bug-eyed monster approach. He felt that understanding our place in the universe could help reshape human pursuits and aspirations. And if you look at what's happening in the world today, that kind of vision to show that humanity should have a shared path, a shared interest of moving away from the boundaries of our own world and into exploring space, I think that is the message that's being lost, and we need to actually try to bring that back. Because, and I've said this for decades, all world leaders should be made to go to the space station in orbit around the Earth to look at how beautiful our planet is, but then to look beyond it and just see how black the rest of the universe is. And it makes us feel just how important that it is that we survive as a species. Because although firmly I do believe that we cannot be the only intelligent life here in the universe, if we are, it's up to us to make sure that we populate the stars. And we're not going to do that while we're still fighting wars here on Earth. And a fellow SETI pioneer Frank Drake often recounts how Sagan's infectious enthusiasm during meetings at Cornell University inspired many young scientists to actually consider that career in space science and astrobiology and to join the SETI project. His influence on scientific culture overall, in fact, is amazing. He was a strong proponent of interdisciplinary research, emphasizing that to understand complex scientific phenomena required collaboration across various fields from biology to astrophysics, and that we shouldn't be looking at all projects necessarily in one silo. We should have team members from across the disciplines in science working on particular projects. And his inspiration and outreach in terms of encouraging critical thinking, most noticeably in The Demon Haunted World, his book about why we need to be skeptical and we need to have critical thinking when we explore scientific theories and phenomena, and that would help us avoid falling into pseudoscience. All these kind of ideas that he looks at in terms of the way that certain people went down the road of creating these worlds where aliens have visited in the past based on some spurious paintings and cave drawings. He wanted very much, he didn't want to quell inquiry, he didn't want to quell imagination, but he wanted to actually make sure that people approached each of these individual bits with a skeptical mind and looked at it scientifically speaking, rather than engaging in just pseudoscience. And Neil deGrasse Tyson, who was one of the biggest American scientific communicators of this recent generation, he was inspired by Sagan, and he actually shares the story of when Sagan invited him to spend a day at Cornell University after a brief correspondence, and this gesture of mentorship profoundly influenced his own career and his approach to engaging the public with scientific ideas. So again, this legacy of Carl Sagan's extends into generation after generation. And I think one of the key concepts that he put forward was this whole idea of the scientific inquiry, having that mind that says, I am going to be skeptical, I am going to engage in critical thinking, even though I'm excited about what this idea might be proposing to me, but we need to apply scientific methods to everything and not assume anything. And his books, Cosmos and, as I said, The Demon Haunted World, Science as a Candle in the Dark in particular, explore this idea that we need to have this skeptical mind when we're looking at what science is putting forward or what people are putting forward as science. And he did, well over 600 scientific papers and articles. He's done modelling and work on Venus and planetary atmospheres, exobiology. He's contributed significantly to all those fields, and he was always, always engaged in lectures and public talks, and he inspired humans and colleagues alike. When he did lectures at Cornell University, where he was professor, he often had overflowed crowds of students eager to hear his insights on the latest space science topics. There were also some other projects and initiatives that he was part of. He helped found the Planetary Society in 1980, and colleagues like Bruce Murray and Lewis Friedman, who also helped form the Planetary Society, they aimed to promote space exploration and the search for extraterrestrial life, and it's actually become now one of the world's largest organisations dedicated to public outreach and advocacy for space science. And I would recommend to everyone listening to this episode, if you've got any interest at all in space exploration, and in particular the search for extraterrestrial life and how looking into the far reaches of space can be useful and beneficial to us here on planet Earth, you should sign up to the Planetary Society. They need, obviously, there's the membership fee. It's not expensive. Just, I think we should all go and do that if we've got any interest at all in expanding beyond the confines of planet Earth. He also took part in the so-called Pale Blue Dot projects. So this was a pale blue dot photograph of Earth taken by the Voyager 1 spacecraft. And Sagan's lecture and book emphasized the Earth's fragility and the need for humanity to unite in preserving our planet. And that's the message, again, that we've kind of forgotten about. And we need to really start to, as thinkers, we need to start engaging more with other people and getting them switched on to this whole idea that the planet Earth is fragile in terms of how it supports us. It could very easily, we could be wiped out tomorrow and planet Earth would continue on without even skipping a beat. And that's what we need to understand. And we need to be custodians and guardians of the planet and not, as we currently are, behaving like almost like a parasite or a virus. And you know what happens with parasites and viruses? Eventually the body's defense mechanism goes to try and remove the virus from the system. And you know, we have to remember that the planet Earth is in many ways a living, breathing entity with its own ecosystem and its own nervous system, and it will only tolerate so much abuse, I think, from us as a species. And we need to remember that. And I think Carl's work in this needs to be re-promoted, and we need to be getting out there. And this is why we need to join these societies, and we need to start voicing our opinions, and we need to start getting politicians to understand that they need to bring these corporations to heel that basically just keep plundering the planet. We can't keep doing this and expect it to support us. And another thing that I really want to mention is that Carl has left a real legacy of curiosity. He had a way with words, and it wasn't just that he was fantastic at explaining complex scientific concepts in that accessible manner that he had. It was the fact that he was able to inspire a sense of curiosity and a sense of wonder, because these words were almost poetical. I'm going to close this episode with just three of those statements that he made during Cosmos that really kind of made you go, wow. Okay, so let's do that. So the first key quote that I remember that absolutely blew me away was the idea of, we are made of star stuff. We are made of star stuff. And basically, that's the idea that every time at the Big Bang theory of the universe, and when the universe started to form, and then suns would form, stars would form, and then they would explode. Every single molecule that makes up a human being was birthed inside one of those explosions. And this is what is mind-blowing, the fact that every part of the universe is interconnected to every other part of the universe. It's almost like, are we just individual thoughts in a universe that is alive, as a living brain? I mean, I'm not going into a kind of metaphysical pseudoscience idea here, which Carl would not approve of. But in terms of the poetical side of things, when we think about the fact that we are all indeed made up of star stuff, and that should reinforce within us our sense of belonging in the universe and our sense of connection to the forces that inhabit the universe. And we kind of ignore that, and we don't really think about it, because we just go into the, well, we're organic creatures living on a planet that was made 13 point something billion years ago. But it's actually more profound than that. And that's what he was trying to get at with that statement. Another quote that he made at the end of an episode was, somewhere, something incredible is waiting to be known. And what he meant by this was that as much as we know, as much as we have learned, as much as we have pushed the boundaries of science, there is always something waiting that is still going to make us go, whoa, where did that come from? Why is that? What will be the effect of that? And that's what he was saying. You need to be curious. You need to be constantly asking questions. It's not enough just to answer the questions that we have today. We need to be formulating the questions of tomorrow, and then formulating the ways that we can go out and find those next big ideas, those next big concepts, or that next big understanding of why something works the way that it works. I love that quote. Somewhere, something incredible is waiting to be known. Just stop for a moment and think about that. And then finally for this episode, this quote is just beautiful. The cosmos is within us. We are a way for the universe to know itself. And that means that basically we have that mission. We have been given a mission, in effect, to actually seek out and understand why the universe is, how it was formed, why it behaves in the way it behaves, because that is our duty. We have to do that because we are made up of star stuff, as I've said earlier. We need to find that next incredible unknown that's waiting to be known. But the universe itself is what he was trying to say, it was almost as if the universe itself wants us to find out about the universe so the universe can understand itself. Because without conscious thought, then everything is just void. And we have a duty and a mission given that as conscious thinking creatures that are capable of thought, it's our job to find the voice to give to the universe. Does that make sense? So he's just, the way that he just phrased things, just absolutely incredible. I can really recommend that you go and get the DVD box set of Cosmos, the updated version where Carl actually does some explanations of some of the science behind a particular episode that may have advanced since the original filming of it in 1980. But also Tyson's follow-up series, Cosmos, is really worth watching as well, because that brings us bang up to date with some more key advances. Obviously, the likes of Brian Cox and Brian Greene are always worth watching. If you want your mind blowing, in particular, Brian Greene and the way that he talks about superstring theory and the ultimate building blocks of the universe, it's just wow. You will not be sorry for engaging in these kind of practices of going out there and looking at these programs, watching them, reading the books, reading the papers that they've written, and just really following. And another highly recommended book as well is Mary Midgley's Science and Poetry. Mary's no longer with us either, unfortunately, but she was a chief proponent of saying science alone cannot move us to discovering those great mysteries. We need to also engage in philosophical questions. And she was a real key proponent of not just having multi-science disciplinary on a panel or on a project, but also incorporating philosophical students and professors into those bodies, because they were capable of asking questions that sometimes scientists, with their strict need for rules and premises, may not have been able to ask. I just think the whole area that we were missing here is why I got started on doing ThinkWorks in the first place, to encourage you and me to ask questions in fields that we hadn't really considered before, and then to come up with some ideas, put them forward, and actually engage in a discussion. So, that said, as always, there is a post for today's show, and if you go to darreninform.com/ThinkWorks forum, you'll find that there is the post connected to this episode of ThinkWorks, and just give me your comments on there. What kind of ideas have been most mind-blowing to you? Do you have any recollection of how Carl Sagan may have affected your understanding or your interest in science, or any other scientific hero that you would want to put forward to consider as well? And what kind of areas in science and space exploration really interest you the most? So come and join the conversation with me on the forum. And next week, I'm going to follow up this episode by looking at Carl Sagan again, but a quote that I didn't mention in these three, where he talks about bridging the gap between our understanding of science and technology and our dependency on it. It's a fascinating subject. I really can't wait to get into that. So that's next week, and same place, same channel, as they say. But until then, everyone, stay safe, keep asking questions above all else, and come and join me for some of that discussion, because I think we need to actually be engaging with like-minded people more and more, but also trying to convince people to become like-minded people. So, see you all soon. Take care. Bye for now.
Would like to find out more or join in with the conversation, our forum has a corresponding post for you to comment in. Simply go to darreninform.com/thinkworksforum and join in the fun. Or you can join the Facebook page by searching for at Darren Inform for news, tips and other helpful strategies. The show was hosted by Darren Smithson, and the music is by Alexander Nakarada. You have been listening to ThinkWorks, the podcast for thinkers.